Many Americans are trying to move past the pandemic and get back to living life as normal.
It's COVID fatigue versus COVID frustration. 2+ years into the pandemic, masks are off pretty much everywhere, including planes, trains, buses.
We'll wear masks if they're required, but we're not concerned as far as catching it.
Everyone just excited to be back and doing what they have to do to watch their team.
I'm just happy to have this atmosphere back. It really does feel like normal.
I came here just because I wanted to enjoy the city, get out of the house, COVID's over.
But not everyone is able to move on. Right now, COVID cases are rising again, and so are hospitalizations. And the latest Omicron variant, BA2, is the most contagious yet. Yesterday, I sat down with Rochelle Walensky, the director of the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, to talk about how these two realities are playing out at once.
Do you think that at some point, every American will get COVID?
I don't know the answer to that question. I think when a disease is endemic and every season, you know, some proportion of Americans get the upper respiratory infections of the season, and coronavirus may be among them. Could we be in that kind of state several years from now? We could, in which case then perhaps everybody would get COVID. I don't think we're quite there yet.
If COVID is here to stay, I asked Rochelle to reflect on what she'd do differently when the next public health emergency arrives.
I will say that we at CDC are undergoing real internal discussions and review of the last several years to understand what we might have done better, how we might have improved, what we did really well, so that we can be better prepared for the future.
Welcome to The Journal, our show about money, business, and power. I'm Ryan Knutson. It's Tuesday, May 17th. Coming up on the show, CDC Director Rochelle Walensky on how we'll know when the pandemic is over and what the agency is doing to rebuild public trust.
This episode is brought to you by Vonage. With Vonage Video API, your developers can easily create custom video experiences tailored to your business. Enhance every conversation with live video, whether it's delivering faster tech support, improving customer service, or enabling interactive meetings and events. Unlock the true video potential of your business. Discover how at Vonage.com.
Last week, the country topped 1 million COVID deaths. And now, a new variant is driving yet another surge. But Dr. Rochelle Walensky of the CDC says we're better able to deal with the virus now than ever before.
I think we should all acknowledge the tragic milestone that this country has reached, the 1 million lives lost and many, many more livelihoods lost. So we can't sort of have a comment about the pandemic without speaking to that. I think we should acknowledge that we are in a very different place than we were just a year ago. We have vaccines, we have boosters, we have tests, and we have therapeutics. And all of those truly collectively have been game changers in our approach to this pandemic. That said, over the last several weeks, we have seen an increased number of cases in this country. So down from our nadir of around 25,000, you know, several weeks ago, now we're up to about 87,000 on average cases per day. So we've seen a higher number of cases. We have seen an increase in hospitalizations, though not nearly what we had seen during peaks of Omicron. And then finally, what I will say is CDC recommendations continue to recommend that in our transportation corridors, including our buses, trains, hubs, and airplanes, that you mask in those corridors. Of course, there's legal rulings that have overturned our mandates, but CDC does continue to recommend that you mask in those travel corridors.
How will the CDC decide when the pandemic is over? Will we ever reach that point?
I think people are really looking for a date. How do I know today that it's over? And I don't think that date is going to come. We are not going to necessarily say, you know, it's over today. Because what we will likely see is smaller and smaller waves, potentially, of less impactful infections from this disease. And so I think we now recognize that elimination of COVID-19, of SARS-CoV-2, is not the goal here. And that, you know, what we will need to do is maintain high levels of community immunity through both vaccines, boosters, and for some through infection to maintain levels that keep people out of the hospital.
So does that mean that we'll be wearing masks and we'll be doing testing and we'll be quarantining after exposure or infection for 5 days pretty much forever?
You know, I don't necessarily think forever is the goal here. And I don't really think that masking forever is the goal here. The goal here is to sort of understand the amount of disease around you as sort of a barometer and to say, like, there's a lot of disease out there right now for these couple of weeks. Why don't people take precautions and wear a mask to protect themselves? But this is going to be, at least for the medium term, where our guidance is likely going to say lots of infections, lots of cases, lots of disease. Individuals may want to take individual precautions.
You've been talking about the importance of getting vaccinated. And that's obviously one way that the country can continue to move forward. But there is the population of infants to 5 years old that still are not able to get vaccinated. The vaccine hasn't approved yet. Moderna says that it has an effective vaccine for kids under five. Why hasn't the government approved it yet?
So let me just sort of walk through the process and say, so first the company submits a full package. So Moderna announced their data before their package was submitted to the FDA. And my understanding is just in the last week to 10 days, that package has been completed at the FDA. That lives with the FDA. I couldn't give you an exact date. And so they're reviewing those data very, very critically so that when they come forward, should they come forward with an authorization, they have reviewed those data. But there's this perception that the data has been sitting with the FDA for weeks or months, and that is not the case. So they do need time to review those data. After the authorization, should it come from the FDA or after their public meeting, the VRBPAC meeting, of reviewing those data, an authorization would come from the FDA, should it come, and then it'll move swiftly to the CDC to review those data again, the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, and then come to me for an ultimate decision.
Dr. Anthony Fauci suggested recently that the FDA was waiting for the Pfizer data to also be ready before the FDA was able to make a decision. Why would that be the case? Why wait?
The FDA is reviewing the data as they receive it. There was some discussion about whether those data would be received somewhat simultaneously. And we haven't heard yet from Pfizer as to when we will be receiving those data. But the FDA is actively reviewing the Moderna data and has no intention to sit on data. Let's just be very clear. We fully recognize the anxiety and motivation for so many parents out there to get a vaccine for their 6-month to 5-year-olds. Nobody is sitting on data.
Coming up, eroding public trust in the CDC and what public health officials can do to fix it.
This episode is brought to you by Vonage. With Vonage Video API, your developers can easily create custom video experiences tailored to your business. Enhance every conversation with live video, whether it's delivering faster tech support, improving customer service, or enabling interactive meetings and events. Unlock the true video potential of your business. Discover how at Vonage.com.
This episode is brought to you by GlobalX ETFs. Buzz around artificial intelligence is seemingly everywhere. Is your portfolio keeping up? Consider the GlobalX Artificial Intelligence and Technology ETF, ticker AIQ, which invests in dozens of stocks at the leading edge of this disruption. Investing involves risk, including possible loss of principal. Technology companies can be affected by rapid product obsolescence and intense industry competition. Before investing carefully, consider the fund's objectives, risks, charges, expenses, and more in the full or summary prospectus at globalxetfs.com. Read carefully. Distributed by SEI Investments Distribution Company.
One thing that I want to talk about is trust. At the beginning of the pandemic, there was a survey that said 69% of Americans believed what they heard from the CDC. This was according to an NBC News poll. And now it's just 44%. First of all, how does that make you feel that at the end of one of the biggest public health emergencies in a generation, really, that trust among Americans seems to have fallen for the CDC?
This is the first pandemic the CDC has ever navigated in its 75-year history. And let's admit that this has been challenging times. We at CDC have been responsible for providing information and guidances with imperfect data, imperfect science, moving science during imperfect pandemic times. And we've been navigating that. There have certainly been challenges that all of us in public health and public service in health have been, you know, adapting to during these times. I think one of the things that's really challenging is that the virus has moved. The virus has changed, and its characteristics have changed. So when people see a new variant, for example, we have to scientifically understand, do our therapeutics work? Do our monoclonal antibodies work? Do our tests work? How is this variant different? Is it more transmissible? Is it more severe? How do our vaccines work against it? Will they hold up? And the answer to all of those questions have changed by each given variant. And so we have to move the messaging while everybody is very anxious for it to be stable. We have to move the messaging as the variant has changed. And that's hard to do.
Are there things that you would have done differently or going forward in the next pandemic that you have learned a lesson from this time to say, we actually don't want to say we follow the science. We want to phrase it differently.
You know, I think when we had said we follow the science, that people anticipated that the science would be black or white. And so I think that what's been interesting through this pandemic is that the science has been gray. We've continued to follow that science, but the science has not been static, and it's our responsibility to update our recommendations when the science moves.
What is more concerning to you, another variant or another virus?
Yes. We are actively working on monitoring for other potential threats. I think many people had anticipated that the next pandemic of our lifetime would be an influenza pandemic. That's not what happened. It was a coronavirus pandemic. But just because we had one in coronavirus does not necessarily mean we've escaped one in influenza. I think given our last 2 years, something that may be more likely to be more proximal is a new COVID variant, a new SARS-CoV-2 variant, one that potentially might be more transmissible and more severe. So that does, of course, keep us concerned, keep us on our toes, keep us continuing to work towards what we would do should that situation arise. But I don't necessarily think that because we had to navigate a coronavirus pandemic that we have therefore been spared an influenza or other kind of pandemic.
As you think about approaching the next bad variant or another virus, do you think that the kind of widespread lockdowns that we saw at the beginning of this pandemic will ever return to the U.S.?
You know, I don't want to say never because we don't really know what the next chapter will hold. I think certainly in the current moment, there is not an appetite for more of that now. And so I think there's a real motivation to be able to avoid that. But we started this interview with a million deaths in this country. And certainly we have to navigate all of the choices that we made, not only with the risks of morbidity and mortality, but the risks of lives and livelihoods as well. And so that's, you know, the work of what we might do should we face it.
The pandemic itself has obviously taken up a lot of focus for the whole healthcare industry over the last 2 years. What has that meant for all the other health issues that Americans face?
You know, I think we will start to see more of the details of that. I do know that certainly when many hospitals were overburdened, overrun with COVID patients, that they didn't have the ability to offer the routine medical care, the elective surgeries, and many other care that they were providing. And similarly, patients were not presenting for that care. Pediatric vaccinations were down, cancer screenings were down, many things were down. At CDC, while we've had about 2,000 people working in our emergency response at any given time, I can also tell you that our work in other areas has not stopped. For example, last year we had 63 foodborne outbreaks. We had 2 cases of monkeypox in this country. We still provided 12 million people antiretroviral therapy for HIV. So the incredible hard work of public health has not had the luxury of being able to stop because there are other threats that are continuing within our country and outside of it.
Well, Dr. Walensky, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks so much for having me.
That's all for today, Tuesday, May 17th. The Journal is a co-production of Gimlet and The Wall Street Journal. This conversation was part of The Wall Street Journal's Future of Everything Festival. You can listen to the full conversation and others at wsj.com/future festival. There's also a link in our show notes. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow.